Hey, this is Alan. The following was actually recorded back, I believe it was August 8th, 2011. This was at a cabin with a number of the Sync Book authors, all got together over the summer. Absolutely wonderful time. And Doug was wise enough to record some of the conversation from dinner. This was what we called our last supper, sort of last night together. There's 10 of us here. We have myself, my wife Melissa, we had Jason Barrera, Doug Bowles, Andras Jones, Crystal and Matt Kennar, Justin Morgan and Molly, and Michael Schacht. The 10 of us were there, had a wonderful time, and I think you'll really enjoy listening to this. I'm only getting around to sort of putting this together now because it's been a long time. We just had the Sync event here in New York last week, and it was nice to have Doug and Andras visit and just see them again. And this was the first, what you're about to listen to was the first time we all got together, and I guess just maybe miss everybody. I wanted to put something together, so here you go. Enjoy.
Can I have a little more? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I love you. A, B, C, D, can I bring my friend to tea? E, F, G, H, I, J, I love you.
Boom, 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 boom.
Sail the ship.
Boom, boom, boom.
Chop the tree.
Boom, boom, boom.
Skip the rope.
Boom, boom, boom. Look at me.
I guess when the military says we're going to do this, we're going to attack Libya on the same day we attack Iraq, and we're going to do it in accordance with this high holiday, holiday, or this star alignment. Okay, we hope it adds power to us, but that shit's going to mess with them too. So yeah. They are subject to the same.
The demon forces. Always you sell your soul and then gets you in the end.
Exactly.
What's the classic story of the oracle who tells whatever king, you know, that someone is sure to win today, or, you know, and the king's decided, well, that's obviously me.
He will destroy it.
Wound up destroying it.
No.
It was the other king who won.
Right. Mm-hmm. And who might have been using the same symbols on his,
right,
you know, shield or...
Yeah.
If you go around the world, all the armies, they all have very similar emblems pasted onto their uniforms and their fighter jets, and that could be evidence of this global army, or it could be the idea that they all think, hey, we slap this on our plane, it'll, you know, give us some advantage in battle. And maybe they're wrong, maybe they're right. It doesn't, either way, it's going to fuck with them.
Well, when you get into, like, you know, killing and taking lives, you do get, you know,
karmic justice.
It's a whole different level of karma than you have to deal with when you're an artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're saying there's more suicides now than the casualties on the American side.
That's been the case since very, like, I remember some people on the radio show were talking about that, and like, it's just like,
yeah, I've heard for a while, like,
crazy
on
numbers,
underground
like five,
stuff,
you know,
but now it's even
five,
like, mainstream.
Or six people a week was like what they were saying, like,
yeah,
was,
which
is nuts.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That SEAL Team 6 shit is bizarre that they all
that just died.
Well, and there was already the weird helicopter crash and
at the actual rate.
Like happened. Something weird was going on, and then I mean, that's fucking weird. Even just the official story is weird.
Yeah, like the pictures don't all match up. And
none of the details did either. The distances and the amount of times they had to fly.
The
water to help his body, and nothing added up.
Yeah.
Anders, the killing in, you know, in Norway, and then the president talks about, he makes this speech, I was reading it, about whoever did this killing, we're not going to sacrifice our democracy and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, well, if Anders did the killing, you know, it's like he was speaking he was speaking Pig Latin. It was like, he was a whole different message. It was very interesting.
Yeah. It was weird.
But now, it's interesting because they were calling him a terrorist. You know, when we had the DC sniper, he wasn't a terrorist. He was some guy shooting people. Mm-hmm. What makes this guy a terrorist? Which is why I think that speech...
Is that the guy from Seattle?
Yeah, I think no. He was from Seattle.
He was from Seattle.
Yeah.
No, he was from Seattle, you're right.
But I guess my thing is, who felt the need to label this a terrorist attack? Which is why, maybe, just playing devil's advocate again, since I'm doing it all weekend, is what if that president was saying, no matter who did it, we're not going to give up our democracies, because maybe they're being pressured, saying, you see, you had a terrorist attack, you need naked body scanners in your airports, and you need mm-hmm. the U.S. to step in and control your military. Who knows?
It seems like Scandinavian regions, I mean, you have Sweden, mm-hmm. Norway and stuff, they have a lot of freedoms, more or less, up there, especially like a lot of the internet stuff is really based out of...
But I've heard that, you know, different people up there saying that it's getting... They're noticing they're putting the lockdown.
They're putting the clamps on.
Yeah. Right. So then when you have a guy suddenly pop up, if you're trying to clamp down on a country that's resisting it somewhat, you need a terrorist attack.
Or something to add a motive.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I just think it's really weird that he was called a terrorist if he's just some guy, he's a crazy sniper. We had Columbine. Columbine wasn't a terrorist attack. It was somebody shooting a bunch of people.
I heard, like, when it was going on, they don't know who's doing it, and they had all these, like, they're like, call up the experts, and the experts were like, yeah,
Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, they're like, the Muslims, and so you have all this, like, panel of talking heads saying that it's Islamic extremists or blah, blah, blah. Then, of course, that's not the case, you know.
But it's have the propaganda these experts, put out there first, yeah. They don't have to be right, they just got to put it into your head.
Mm-hmm. That was the guy, the Mark Passio guy, was talking about different ways of implanting. His thing is about mind control, and it's not about, like, zombie, alien mind control, or like what I was talking about. But that, just literal things of like, that you have to have money is a form of mind control, mm-hmm. because it controls your mind. And are you saying, like, when... You'll notice when someone's speaking on the news that there's like information overload. So you usually have people behind them and several screens behind them. And there's a ticker on the bottom, and it is a programming of sorts because there's all this information overload, and it's almost like roughing up something to then smooth it out.
So
you're like stirring up the subconscious mind to make it easier to implant.
Right, because you're trying to suck it up. You're trying to go, I missed that ticker. I missed this. Yeah. So you're trying to suck it all in.
Yeah, so it's like rough something up with sandpaper and then smooth it out so you have all this extra information.
But do you guys see ads, or have you been able to, I don't know, I was able to not, I don't see advertising anymore. I mean, it's not something that...
Yeah, you kind of don't, but you do.
The subconsciously?
Subconsciously.
Yeah.
Well, I think they've talked about, like, with augmented reality, so, like, maybe the next step in design is that my glasses are some sort of interface.
Mm-hmm.
And so they use the example of, there's, like, an animation of a kitchen, and so you're cooking spaghetti, so you would go, like, 35 minutes, I don't know, to bake the bread, and then you're, like, 10 minutes of boiling water. So you'd almost do that, and then as you're walking around, there would be little floaters... Turn away, you don't see it, but when you turn back, you would see, like, 5, 4, 3, you know, like, over the stove or stuff like that, or over the teapot. And then they say, well, that similarly, you would get little icons. You would have, if you wanted, you would have a little Burger King icon spinning right here in your field of vision, and the longer you kept it open for, you get a credit that you could then redeem for, like, coupons and stuff. Which more or less is what they're doing. And, like, I worked at this big advertising place doing freelance for, like, a month and a half. And the recent thing they did for Burger King was that they bought out a whole channel on pay-per-view, and they just had, like, a spinning, you know, sizzling Whopper with flames and shit on it. And when you watched it for 5 minutes, you'd get, like, a free Whopper coupon. But they would have things like press up, press sideways, you know, to make sure that you're actually watching it. We're just kind of paying you to watch.
Stand by for mind control.
Yeah. That it totally is like that type
of thing. We'll pay you for it. Yeah, just stare at our logos.
We all do look at logos all the time while you're on the computer. Which there are actually not many logos around here right now. But usually, like, in the ordinary day.
And food and the
hell or high watermelon.
Oh yeah, I mean there are actually a decent amount when you really begin to look at it.
Well, but you guys are wearing some of the most potent ones yourselves.
Yeah.
I'm reclaiming my name from these.
That's what we got.
But I feel like driving around San Francisco that I actually get tired. Like when you drive through the city and there's like the many Times Square type market right. areas and stuff, and there's so many letters and there's Chinese characters everywhere, and there's California is just has so many signs of like no left turns except for every fourth Tuesday on the third leap year of a decade. And you're like, it's tired because you're just processing the information. You're like,
That's why I like coming out to here. Because you can go into nature and there are no logos. It is refreshing.
It's not linear.
It's totally organic.
Mm-hmm. Even when we were talking about coming out here, it was like, you know, I'm in New York where I have a similar experience of seeing just media bombarded. I don't watch TV, I haven't watched TV in years, but I'm constantly seeing ads on the subway or, you know, ads on the side of buses, or it's constant. And sometimes you could do like those sync walks where you walk around and go like, oh shit, look at that, oh shit, look at that, oh shit, look at that. But the nice thing coming here is, for the most part, we really don't have that. Okay, we got some, you know, beer with like ISIS on it, and we can go, ha ha, check that out. But for the most part, this is sort of like a proof of, it's not that out there, it's not like some sort of media brainwashing. This is, we're still able to sync with nature and ourselves and with a conversation I was having with you, and then they come in. So it's, what I like about it is it's nice, it's more organic, and it sort of proves that this is us doing this. Mm-hmm. You know? We don't need to interface, like, we can interface with that media and sync with it. And we can also interface with each other and sync with each other. So, I think it's nice and refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the concept of eco-psychology? Mm-hmm. It's the study of how by aligning with nature it brings us more in line with our true nature. And one of the pioneers of it was this guy named Robert Greenway. He's got a farm. Like I was mentioning, he's got a garlic farm up in Fort Townsend. Organic farmer, like, he's created this, reclaimed this land, and has a whole 100-year plan for how it can like live on as a land trust. And he was involved in Leary's the prison LSD experiments they did in the early 60s. Anyway, so eco-psychology, what he would do, he developed this by taking students out, from his college students, out into nature for like 2-3 weeks at a time. And what he said, he's found that like it only took like 2 or 3 days of people being in nature to deprogram society, that people very easily, you know, it didn't take years of therapy, it didn't, you know, that just by like having to live with each other in the woods away from all of that stuff, you just naturally sink into that, into those natural rhythms. And then the idea is that you explore that, like ways of bringing, like if you live in an urban area, bringing elements of nature into your surroundings has a tonic effect on your psyche. You know, obviously if you're able to like go and sit for an hour next to a river.
Yeah.
Well, there's like fractal. I've noticed I get like allergies when places are closed in, and it's kind of like the air is almost like dead. But I never have allergies when the air is moving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like when you see smoke drifting, there you can see like the fractal quality of the air, and you get more of that when you're out here. Even just the sound is more soothing, you know? And I think, like, to me, I've become more sensitive to computers humming or lights. And like we were living up in this little town called like Paradise, California. It's kind of middle of nowhere. And I would notice a huge difference between being there, like in the woods, and then coming back into the city. You almost feel like you're coming back into like a smog of unnatural vibrations that are kind of like opposite to your energetic field or just your basic.
That's what he'd say. He'd say it takes very little time to get people to like drop society, but that with the first few groups that he'd bring people back, and like he'd get a call at like midnight from like campus police, and there'd be like one of his students would be just like a 7-Eleven laughing hysterically, like manic, and like losing it. And he'd have to, and he realized, oh, I needed to do something to be able to help people to transition. So we started teaching them like yoga and meditation out in the woods so that when they came back, they had something real to align with, because you come back to this fake world, and if you've really taken that on, this just seems like insane. Like, how can you relate to?
Mm-hmm. I like
Terrence Malick has a really great scene in Tree of Life that the whole movie is taking place in this house, and it's just every shot is, you know, it's wonder, you know, the beauty of what is. Mm-hmm. And then Sean Penn is in this completely sterile cement and steel world, going up an elevator, and everything is glass, and everything is. And but you can see that it's the same. It's the same. It's right. Just it lacks the aliveness that.
Sure.
So it's interesting because somehow, obviously, these two worlds need to come together.
Yeah. Because my thing with him in the car was that, you know, I very often hear, especially on podcasts, like I listen to a lot of stuff, and people do mention this idea of like the city is this unnatural, and then you get in like the idea of like, you know, Masons aligned your streets for this, and or this is something's planned to, you know, all this stuff. Like, so nature is different. Nature is just where nature has planned what river passes by and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, that's true. But I don't know. Living in a city, I was sort of challenged by that. This idea, you know, it's maybe like your same idea of like Winnipeg is the center. What about Boise? Well, everyone's saying, nah, but you see, the New York City or any city is like the poison place. What?
It's like Winnipeg and Boise. I love the universe in which Winnipeg and Boise is like the center. That sounds like a novel. That just
it is. Well, it's the undiscovered
id. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, Boise all of a sudden is on the map again. That town's been like, yeah.
Christ,
the Black Rock is in Boise.
Hey.
Heart of the Monster? That's Idaho, but it's close enough.
But as Jason pointed out, it's the id, so it definitely has its, you know, it is its own realm and its own energy. I guess my thing was, for being in the city, it's like, so then, am I in the wrong place? Do I need to escape out of here?
Mm.
Or, and it's like, but what I've enjoyed is, I can now look, you know, there are days when it's so stressful. There are days where there's too many people and I'm walking down the street and it's congested and the subway's not running right and I'm like, this fucking sucks. You know, I want to get the hell away from the city. And then there's other days where I can just I just sort of like walk around with a smile on my face and I'm like, this is nature. This is nature right here. Like, the way these people are moving and just, mm-hmm. I don't know, you can kind of watch it as this completely organic,
kind of Scotsy.
this alive, you know, all these people in this sort of organism moving, and it just seems like, I'm like, this is nature, this is a jungle, and it's like, you know, it's not something unnatural. Perhaps it is unnatural, but nature is still exerting its force over it. Nature is still saying, my rules still apply, this is how you behave on my fucking planet, or in my universe, or whatever it is.
Plastic. This is like the kernel for me, plastic, because it's magic, it's so magic, mm-hmm. yet nothing can eat it. It just gives everything cancer.
Right.
You know, what are we? We're Plastic Man. You know. There was
plastics turning us all into women.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when you're talking about Boise, I was thinking, if there's a Boise, is there a girlsy out there somewhere?
Uh-huh. We need to find her.
Yeah. Boise's out there all alone in northern Idaho. So.
What?
It's southern.
Southern, well, you know, but the northerners are out there.
As we were driving here, we realized that the snake becomes the dove. Because the Snake River is the major artery that goes through Idaho. And then when it connects, it becomes the Columbia. Yeah, and the snake and the dove.
With what you were saying about the city, and I think Terrence McKenna talks about, like, to not distinguish between, like, nature and technology, that we have arose from nature, so it is natural, you know?
Yeah.
But I think my problem is less that it's not natural, but I think it definitely is out of harmony. I don't want to say, like, absolutely is out of harmony.
That was our argument. So that there's a natural, the system of nature has immediate consequences if you get out of balance. Beaver balance.
Beaver balance.
Right. But we can leverage the system to our advantage, and that's why we've been so successful as a species. So you put up a big dam, and all of a sudden you can put a bunch of people in a place that really couldn't have a bunch of people unless you put that dam up. But there are going to be consequences of putting up the dam. And it seems like we're at the point in the system now where we're beginning to have the consequences come home.
This is where it is, the Jose Arguez stuff. I've been reading stuff about him recently. I don't know how many of you know him. He was the guy behind the harmonic convergence. He brought a lot of the mind and stuff. And he talks about synchronicity is synchronizing with the natural calendar.
What he called geomancy,
which is seeing us, like seeing human society and human consciousness as an expression of Earth consciousness.
Politeness is nice.
And all that is feng shui, being like organizing ourselves with in alignment with Earth's energies, things will flow and work better, and we're out of balance like that.
You don't need to get in sync, you just need to recognize you are.
Right, and at the same time, if you recognize that you are, you're going to build things differently.
Right.
Like, the person who realizes that they're in sync is going to design a dam that is in sync, as opposed to someone who thinks that they're out of sync and their job is to control nature.
We're not
going to create a dam that doesn't, that has no flow to it, and is just sort of like, I'm not thinking more than 10 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, I stopped the water and then I succeeded.
So the power plants by your Olympia Tree of Life, those power plants, we were saying, are they intentionally placed at these Sephiroth points, or is it a complete accident, it's a synchronicity that these power plants are each positioned by where the power centers would be? Now, if it's accidental, that would almost prove that this nature is going to exert itself,
right,
even in like an industrial place where we're throwing probably polluting power plants in the middle of a city full of smog, and yet that nature, that strange higher geometry is emerging.
That it comes out no matter what.
Yeah.
So I think Jake Kotze, that's his whole thing, and that's why they love pop so much, is because it's trash. Right. But you can find God in the trash.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere.
The Shark King is found in the tarot pile.
When Alan Watts says, he's like, you know, it's obvious that life grows out of death or out of shit, you know, that you see new stuff grows out of literally shit and manure. He's like, so in some ways, the U.S. not the most, like, in the future, because we're just creating the most tremendous pile of shit ever, you know, that people just eat and eat and eat and shit and shit and shit and mountains of shit and garbage, you know, that it would be the new rainforest would be here. Granted, my problem
if you
is
can,
I think we're going
to... When you figure out... My daughter wants to get a... She wants Santa Claus to build a robot cat that eats oil, and I'm like, why? But I said, if you can get that
Kevin
thing
Costner
to...
Kevin Costner has developed... He's like, this came up
that
in our
robot
culture. He's been, since Waterworld, he got totally into water. He's been investing millions of dollars in creating these machines that are turbines that, like, that clean... Mm-hmm. That will... You put oily water in it, it goes... The oil comes out at one end and the water comes out the other end.
And he offered to help
with the spill.
Yeah, with the oil spill, which they told him
and
it's still a mess.
Yeah, because who knows?
They didn't have to put a bunch of Corex in the water instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So hold on. So Melissa was going to say something for like the first time all week.
I don't
know. Gods must be crazy. Beginning of Gods must be crazy. We're supposed to all talk. You got to do it.
Yeah, no worries. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
No.
That was something to do with the whole city and the nature thing. The beginning of God's Mystery Crazy was like, you know.
They drop one piece of trash into...
Well, actually, even before that, like the beginning, like where they're showing scenes from like a office, like, you know, normal person's life, and then it's like they go from the wilderness to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, they're showing, like, the African village where they're all just, like, relaxed and all eating together, and then you see, like, her in the kitchen with her kids, and she, like, throws some slop into a plate, and she's like, I gotta go, all right, here, take this, you know, and just showed that, like, nice dichotomy.
And I think the narration during that part was really
fun. Yeah, you need to laugh.
The dog is scared of the wood.
So
stack that we were throwing the hatchet at. They were just like out there barking at it. They were all scared of it.
The dogs must be crazy.
My problem with this system thing is that it's always like, it's going to be awesome, not right now, but soon. You know, it's like coming soon and somebody right around the corner. And with that next iPhone, it's going to be fucking perfect. And then but it never comes. But in the meantime, it's almost like, if you look at it as like an organism, it's like some kind of robotic entity that is literally just eating the earth and all the living things on it, you know. And I do think nature's resilient. It would take a lot to actually kill it, but it is it almost is like an infection of sorts that is eating it. And I mean, there's some, on the other hand, there's some validity that I think Terrence McKenna said, you know, like the cosmic mind or the guy in mind was bored with birds, bees, and trees and butterflies and parrots, you know, and so it was like, well, I want to ramp things up a little bit and let's have wars and motorcycles and metal and, you know,
that's so
like,
funny. I was just reading all these quotes.
Yeah, like, let's make shit up the stakes some, you know, like, so there could be some validity to that.
It sounds like evil time.
That's how more
growth. If I was inventing things, I'd start with lasers.
I think that's
the whole thing of the 2012 Matrix thing, is that it's like that shift of it's got to get worse before it gets better. It's like the simultaneity of things is happening, so it's like it's getting worse and getting better. Yeah. Infinitely at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like these, like, all of these contradictions are just like this, they're like the electrons.
Well, who's got
like
the shard for the heal the crystal?
That's where I was just going. When Agra says about the great conjunction, she says, great conjunction, sometimes good, sometimes bad, big change. You know, like, it's just a big change, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And it's like, yeah, it's like, there's a sort of beauty in that. It's like, we could feel something's turning, and yet every moment something's changing. We're always at a great conjunction. Like, when you pull into the gas station, you're stepping into the future. You decide what you do from today. So, it could be a special day in 2012, or it could be like this second, and this second, and this second. So.
Well, I think, and what I was saying, I go spiral out through these crazy ideas and polarities and back and forth and through the wormhole and inside, outside the universe, back, and then you just come back to the same spot. And I kind of just feel like right now we are, at this very second, we're shifting into a new dimension. Like, right now, and right now, and right now, and right now, and right now. Like, at every second that we were, like, at the edge of the Big Bang, like, there was an explosion. But it didn't just, like, explode and then stop. It's, like, constantly exploding into new space and into new uncharted territory constantly. So that
like,
it is,
riding that wave out?
Yeah, that we are, like, the feelers out at the end of the tree of life. That we're, like, the new growth, and we're kind of feeling our way out into some, like, 4D space, and that it is like the edge of a Big Bang, and you're like, so it's not like the 2012 thing is another like around, well, it's going to be fucking awesome, but not right this second.
It's going to be another Harold Camping thing, isn't it? So it's going to, something is going to happen, but no one will see it because
it's happening right
now. Yeah, that's the thing. It's been happening for
forever.
Like, and there's a speeding up that is like in all. All of our lifetimes has been like there's like there was a slower, more pastoral relationship to time where if you could be like it was good.
When's the last time you set for a spell?
Well, I think
you know. I mean, what are you guys gonna do
when you start to be able to move faster than your feet will carry you? That affects it. When you start to be able to speak to someone who's not in the same room to you.
Well, we do
that starts to shift it. Like, that's what I mean. Yeah. When you start to add those things in, everything, consciousness starts to move way, like, faster than it does when you're, you have to walk from here to there, or shout, or whatever, you only have meat.
You can live your whole life in the same village, and, you know.
That was normal.
That was it.
Yeah. The people who went 100 miles were the anomalies.
Every place is here, every time is now.
Right, but we're, the thing is that the that 20
now let me tweet about that real fast.
Is like, and that's what Bethesda is talking about. Is that, what is it? Novelty, yeah. Novelty theory, and the I Ching and the Mayan calendars all lead up to there being a something, a moment of like novelty shift, where something in terms of consciousness, it can only speed up so fast before it it breaks into a new kind of a new kind of consciousness.
What if it's like a the splitting of a of a single cell animal into two cells? Isn't that?
But we it feels more like that we are the two celled animal that is fusing into more of a one cell. Like the dualities are meaning less. Like we're living in less and less of a masculine, feminine world, or, that it's a lot, our consciousnesses are inhabiting both and way, way more than the most advanced people in that regard were even 20 years ago.
Can I just propose a thing for you guys to talk about is, what if it's the same thing? What if the singularity is like, paradoxically, also the most complex moment? So, it is a cell dividing, meaning the universe is getting more and more complex, and yet at the same time we are coming together to make that complexity. What if in some...
Holy moly, that's entropy.
Yeah, so like, it's...
Or syntropy.
It's becoming unified and more complex
at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And that's it, it's all the paradoxes break down into, like... And then you're saying that that's the ultimate. Like, if everything becomes a unity, then there's a new paradox. That it creates a new paradox, which is the non-unity context. Because we're always going to be finding these dualities.
So someone's going to branch off and then we're going to shoot back out again?
No, what I think is that there is a new kind of consciousness that, like, there is just a different something beyond duality thinking.
Yeah.
Like, pure duality, pure linear thinking.
It's like the difference between a cube and a tesseract.
Yeah.
It's like something that we can't really even imagine properly.
Any more than than your great-grandparents could imagine the internet.
Right, right.
Try and explain that to someone who's barely getting their mind around a car and still going, whoa, Bessie, when they brakes,
Well, I was thinking even that if I took the iPhone I have now back to 2001, that people would be like, what the fuck is that?
And that's the novelty. That's like Terrence McKenna's novelty theory, like, to a T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I agree with you, too. I think there's some... every time I think about anything, though, I kind of think... I end up being like, yeah, but I'm like, no, that's not it either. But I think there's some danger of, like, the infinite growth model, and that in always trying to live or always to have, like, life without death or, like, growth without decay, that you end up creating the opposite. So it might be that the novelty is increasing to the zero point, and then it's just like blows itself apart to some extent, that it's just like couldn't hold itself together anymore. And not to be like negative about it, but because I kind of tend more towards the side of what you're saying. And the biggest thing I think that I see like actually like evidence of happening, like I think there's consciousness, but it's hard to like measure quantitatively, is like the doubling of information of language is happening. And I was saying earlier, Google was saying, this was like 2 years ago, that every day we're creating more new information than we did from 2003 all the way back through all of human history.
Right.
Every day. And so now it's even at a faster rate, and it is going to hit that omega point, or I don't know what, of the language.
Total information.
Crystal had a thing she had said when we first started the Mask of God thing that I thought was pretty profound, is this idea of this almost schizophrenic God that needs to see through all of our eyes. It's sort of like the Beastmaster, it's like it can see through your experience and your experience and my experience, and it needs this crazy complex thing so it can perceive everything.
Because each experience is so unique.
Right.
Like, things are created from that experience. No experience is the same, so that's what makes it more complex. Like, with each experience, more is created out of that.
So if his thing is it's coming together, perhaps as you bring your perspective and you bring your perspective, and we're all kind of bringing this into this singularity moment, that's why it's getting more and more complex, because now this collective unconscious Godhead, whatever it is sort of, it knows how to perceive all these different ways, and it's completely complexified its way of thinking. And that's what this new paradigm could be, is just as we're sort of throwing, this is what I learned, this is what I learned, we're all sort of bringing it together.
See, my paradigm is that nothing ever changes. It's always just the same thing over and over again, an endless horrible cycle of Groundhog Day style. Purgatory. But like the Bible is kind of a metaphor for life, where you've got all these little stories that seem really terrible and meaningless and just
and ridiculous.
But then once you see the whole thing through the initiated eye of the Kabbalist or whatever, you see that all the letters are just the different jewels on the garments of the Shekinah or whatever. So it's just kind of rediscovering that same principle that is behind like the Kabbalah and all that.
Sure. Now, Sybil had written something pretty early on.
So I thought you should also read The Divine Invasion. That's exactly what that book's about.
Sybil had written that, you know, it's just all a cycle. It's just a remix. And your comment to that was, I wish we could convince that these people seeing this stuff, that it's not just an endless loop, that there are new possibilities.
But you can remix it, and that's where the novelty comes from. So this is the now. The now is all about reappropriation of something. So we're not as, I mean, we're still creative, but we're not creating anymore. We're taking what's existing, and for us it's pop culture, and
like rap.
It is. What we're doing is basically hip-hop. We're taking the beats out of the movie, but it's weird because it's not... What we have to say isn't like just id-generated. Oftentimes, like, hip-hop tends to just speak to the id, but there's something really conscious about the strange... You know, I'm going to, you know, follow the path to where it takes me. You know, if it takes me to Kevin Costner and then Greek poetry, great.
I'm just curious if you still, if you would expand on that idea that if it is this repeated hero's journey, how is it through remix? I just was curious your opinion, the idea of like.
Can you break the cycle, though? Is that
right? Are there new branches?
Are we stuck in a?
Well, I mean, Truman has to get out of the mystery play.
So he's stuck in the cycle until he breaks.
But is the mystery play just what we need to make it through life and know that we're gonna die?
If you go back to so are you just going back to the garden?
So then there's like different levels of understanding each thing, like. Something can be the same story over and over again, but we don't understand it all each time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this idea of reading a book 10 years later, watching a movie 10 years later, and it's like, it doesn't speak to you the same way because now you've added all your... you've integrated your different masks of God, and now you've, you know, have this new set of perspectives, and now you see that movie completely differently.
But see, with the whole city paradigm that you were talking about, again, that's like the kind of like egoic construct of like the vengeful, wrathful deity, which then again serves to veil the real truth, but the lie behind that is the eternal truth of it.
Right, that it's the kingdom of God at the same time that it's the ugly city.
Right, the Shekinah again.
Yeah.
Metropolis and conflict.
Yeah.
So it's always lurking behind that if you can just...
I like to think I live in the synchronous city, you know, synchronicity, right? So it's like I could just see how it moves and how it flows.
That's like your Bible.
And I think that's the key, like that's why it doesn't like sort of like the out of the Truman out. Synchronicity is the, you know, is the God wink that reminds your consciousness that, oh yeah, I've done this before and it was awesome, or it was horrible, or it was awesome, or it was awesome and horrible, and oh yeah, I'm in an awesome swing or a horrible swing, but the synchronicity is that piece that is like the consistency is the consistent thing is the novelty. It's sort of like that no matter where you are, you're going to keep, you know, if you open your eyes, you're going to get that little thing from the universe that's like, yeah, you're here. You know, synchronicity, but you're not just here, you are but you feel the here and now running up and down your spine with the Kundalini energy that gets released.
But what I see it saying is you're a dead man.
Same thing.
Mm. Yeah, I have a lot of weird synchronicities about the fallen God.
Something wrong.
God?
Yeah, that's the message I get.
Well, yeah, I sometimes feel that too, but I almost... And there's been some weird movies recently, the one where the guy's going back on the train, you know? Source Code. And then I've also had with Avatar, and there's been like almost a meme of like this half-paralyzed man. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Coming in, and so it was weird. Like,
yeah, it's like the wounded girl kid.
Right.
Yeah.
And both of you wounded one of your legs on the stone. Yeah, and Melissa just hit my foot again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had like a weird.
Listen, you told me I look like an Arab man. I was thinking of Doug going killing an Arab. So.
Well, a quick aside that while I was tripping on this, and I was like, oh my god, like, I am in some kind of containment chamber, and I am half paralyzed, and like half of my body isn't working, and the whole time I'm doing this, I'm drawing only with my right hand, and I was like, oh, it's not bottom half, it's left half, you know. And so actually, while I was doing that, I was like, started drawing with my left hand while on mushrooms, and it ended up, I could totally feel I was working on the Tree of Life thing, and mm-hmm. by messing with the different circles or different regions, I could feel it like activating yeah. something different. But I do think there's something. Like, I've had a lot of stuff about labyrinths or, like, Daedalus. And so it isn't the exact myth, but that he created the labyrinth and then was cast into the center, you know?
Or the demiurge type.
Yeah, or the dreaming, like, Brahma, right. dreaming god, of that he's dreaming all the different parts, you know?
You know what I do with the labyrinth? It's hard because oftentimes our stories give us what we need, but we can get lost in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like you have to be careful in the underworld, the sink, mm-hmm. because you can go crazy. You can spin around and around and around.
But the thing, so...
Because if I keep looking for the next piece, you know, I'll get addicted and I'll be on that screen and then, you know, I'll go from this Rihanna video to this Rihanna video to this Rihanna video. And then and it's like, oh my gosh. It's all here.
It's all Rihanna. Yeah.
Well, I think... Well, let me finish the thought, and I had some... Well, I guess the one thing I think, whatever you look for, you're going to find. If you look for 387, you're suddenly going to start seeing that shit everywhere.
Right.
And whatever you look, because essentially every point is connected, like in a very literal way. And even on the drive up here, there's Alan Watts quote of saying that what you're seeing is that you see the tapestry on the front, but this like checkerboard pattern over here has threads on the back coming over here.
Right.
So when you're doing synchronicity, you start to pull the thread and like it starts to unravel your coat, and then suddenly her jacket starts unraveling and you're like, well, I didn't know those things were connected. You follow the thread and you're over here. But in reality, every single thread is actually connected. So whatever, it just depends on what thread you grab at the second that you're like, you're pulling it a solid ravel, you're like, oh my god. It's easy to hang yourself with that thread.
Right.
But I've just had like, what I was saying about the dream and Godhead though is that it's some higher being has like created, and not to demean it of saying that we're lower beings, but that what I see is like a Godhead creating this world almost like a labyrinth, and that they designed it, because to me it almost seems that it is designed when you start getting into the thing.
Well, the architect Daedalus created it.
Yeah, and that's what I see.
Yeah, it's blocked inside, I think.
Yeah, that's what I take it as too. And I almost I've had a weird vision of like a pharaoh dreaming in a sarcophagus of like spitting out all these symbols and like dreaming this world and dreaming that it's each one of us. But then when I really went further into that, I was like, okay, well, if this thing's dreaming, that I went in there and it was almost like they were on like a table of sorts, and it was like an experiment, and they're like, okay, let's see what it can dream up next, you know, like let's really push the limits and see how much this thing could dream. And then there's suddenly like hundreds of them, you know, like when you kind of step, kind of wake up from that table and sit up, and you're almost like, felt like I was like strapped in with IVs or something.
Yeah.
And there are all these people around, they're like, it's okay, you know, just keep dreaming, like don't panic, you know, breathe. Like, I feel like I took hallucinogens right at this moment. Yeah. But they're like, just breathe, you know, go with it. Like, really just experience it as much as you can and see what, because and what essentially is happening, like the image I'm seeing right now in my head is in my head, you know, it is the projector and it's occurring in here, like I'm projecting it back out, but it's the only place green, like who's the master that makes the grass green, mm-hmm. you know, like green is you, you know, and so we're less of like a human and more of like an environment, you know. So what I see of all of you guys and what I could ever understand of all of you guys is actually some internal mm-hmm. aspect of me.
Mm-hmm.
So you're almost like in that stupid Jennifer Lopez movie, The Dream, the cell shit, you know, where he like pulls and like his whole cloak like starts pulling, you know, mm-hmm. like the surrounding thing. That's kind of like what our cloak back mm-hmm. here, like all the threads are actually connected. So when you're walking around, you're almost kind of Atlas style lugging around this big world. Mm-hmm. But then you have multiple people in, like we're SEAL Team 6, they're like, send them fuckers to Earth,
right.
See what they can, you know, let's see what they can look at, you know, or what they can feel, or how fucking cold that water really is. And like, you're like uploading that back, and they're like, woohoo, that's cold, you know, and send that back up to them. And to you, like, feeling cold, like, might be completely different than...
Yeah,
and so they're like, let's put some this team in here and, like, tinker around and see what they can come up with. But in the same way that I put these little breadcrumbs in the cover, like I kind of realize the synchronicity of doing it. Because I've just had some synchronicities that I'm like, where's the fucking cameras at? You know, like what's going on? Like, and it kind of makes me nervous. It kind of scares me too. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is just too, it's a setup, you know? Like,
so no, I think that that's just the nature, like that is more the nature of reality mm-hmm. than... not.
Yeah, that's like what
if we were really our true animal selves, we wouldn't even notice synchronicity. Mm-hmm. That just would be our experience.
We had that argument though. That if you're in your beaver nature, you've just made your dam, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a dam that's mm-hmm. such that it is a dam, but you know, it's within the bounds of the natural system. So, is the beaver conscious?
You're just seeing yourself as apart from the beaver. My thing is, because there's some alien sitting there on, like, you know, Sirius with a big telescope going, like, look, you know, Doug just made some spaghetti, you know, and it's like, you know, it doesn't he realize that spaghetti is just, that's just nature, but when we build, you know, our Death Star, that's not...
No, but so, you know? That's the important, what is consciousness, right. Who and who has it?
Right.
Dogs?
Sure.
Probably have consciousness. Do beavers have consciousness? And what is it?
This comes back to the whole idea of geomancy, that like if you're part, that we're part of a whole system, that the Earth is a system, that also it's connected to the heavens, to the other astral bodies, and in the middle of it, there are these parts of the Earth, which are the animals and which we're one of, and we happen to be the wiliest animal of our generation of animals, right? Not as strong as the dragons and the dinosaurs, and not as smart as whoever comes after us.
We were good walkers, and we got thumbs.
Yeah,
you know, saber-toothed tigers and lions, but I bet on the monkeys with the thumbs.
Yeah,
they're the ones.
But we are, you know, and we developed language, and so we declared ourselves separate from nature, and then we've been on that trip since language began.
Well, that's interesting too, because the trip has been away from.
Right, but what we're finding is that
we can't get away from
it. Language has taken us so far that now there's so much novelty, Terence McKenna's novelty, that we are now, that creates its own natural matrix. And we are humans are starting to realign with natural rhythm through the very toxic thing that took us out of the garden, language, right? Right.
So can you get the antidote in the poison?
As long as you can get that it's not good or evil, that it's good evil, 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 then you're getting closer to the garden, and that's what I think what we're doing. What are you doing?
I thought it was, and it isn't maybe the official wording of it, but they say like 2012 is like the end of history, you know.
The end of.
But I've thought of it as the end of his story, you know, and so. With that doubling of information, it would be, because it's largely history is a boys' club story of
his story.
He smited the Vikings
is a mystery. Mrs. story.
That could be interesting. The return of the mystery.
It's a mystery.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't made that connection of it, which is silly, but
it's a drag queen name.
So can I just tell you guys what sort of freaked me out? Do you realize what we did? You mentioned before the giant spaghetti monster, the flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah.
So we just ate God. We just ate the body and blood of the giant spaghetti monster. Are we disproving it? Did we destroy God? Did we is it the Eucharist?
No, it's the Eucharist.
Yeah. No, of course, especially where it's the Last Supper.
Yeah, Michael is apparently.
What?
The Last Supper, yeah.
What we are actually, though, it's funny that they say, like, as a comedic movie, like...
You're Jesus tonight?
I guess
so. That's
great. Porn star Jesus.
So you are porn star Jesus.
Judas, right? No.
So sorry.
We got Buddha over there in the corner.
Am I Judas?
What is he doing here?
Yeah. Who invited him?
God damn.
I did. Yeah. I'm Mary, absolutely. I met this cat in the East. Well, you're all a bunch of assholes.
I thought the flying...
Why do I think that Mary has a southern accent?
She's so sassy.
When I go like and see whatever the entity I think it is that is dreaming this whole thing, that it actually does look a lot like a fucking spaghetti monster. Because it has like a billion... Right,
the beast
currently
with
is, yeah. Right now there's a billion humans that are of all the same family tree. So if you could extrapolate through like 40 time and see the whole human thing, because we would look. And I've got the popularity of the human centipede, because if you trace from birth to death, you would look like a human centipede. You know, like you'd have a million arms, you know, as you progress through, but then if you follow that seed all the way back through your mother, you know, you're physically connected to her, so you would have this thing that actually looks like a big spaghetti type. Like a flying spaghetti monster is one of the best ways to describe it.
With two meatballs.
Yeah, which is almost the polarities of shit. That,
it's fun.
Yeah, uh-huh. That it really is like a big spaghetti.
No one else
would
know what I'm talking about, so I'm asking you.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Remember what? Just because we don't know what you're talking about versus synchronicity,
it's just like,
people, it doesn't
matter.
It's
like a little like Japanese TV show where they have like, I don't even know how to describe it, like somebody running and they make like a Japanese character that you're supposed to try to figure out what path they're running on. And then like
they're teaching kids how to write, so it's like, you know, if you want to imagine with an English language, you would see like they'd have three people and someone would go, run this way. And then the next guy would run like this, and then there'd be a third person who'd run like this. And you have to try and imagine what path did they take, what letter did they just spell out.
This would be,
if you were the centipede, basically you would see the letter spelled out but with the centipede.
A little softer.
That's better.
Yeah. Much better. Just bring a couple of six packs if anybody wants.
Sweet.
Okay, now it's really bright in my
You can cut a bunch of holes in the...
Paper
bag
and
make a lantern.
The elixir.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'll
do that.
What is it?
Just making a lantern. So, one of the things that, like, actually, one of the first things that aligned me with the tree in Olympia, I had a friend and she was, and I've been thinking, someone asked her this, she's like, where do you want to be, where do you see yourself for 2012? Because a big part of it is not even, it has nothing to do with the date or what's going to happen there, but it has to do with, like, what is your vision for, like, what do you, like, if time ends and a new consciousness is beginning, what does that look like? Where are you going to be?
Promised city?
Yeah. You know, that would be, you know, and that's, I'm kind of curious for, like, some people who are synchronistically aligned, like, where, like...
Right.
Like, does 2012 look like New York for you? I was there, so, you know, just...
Like, was there somewhere I was feeling like going for that date?
Or not even just that date. I mean, it could be that date, but when you put your mind on, like, where, you know, where, what am I doing? And then when there's a new consciousness, you know, for me, it was really weird. I was like, I did not think that I would say that my answer to myself would be running around the lake in Olympia. But that was like, just like, before I knew that the Kabbalistic tree was there, it was just sort of like one of those things that was like, okay, that's where I, you know, that's my devil's tower, and that's where I need to be for that thing. It doesn't make any sense. I should be someplace where there's an audience. I should be doing Radio 8 Ball in Times Square, right, for 2012.
That's funny, because I know exactly where I'd want to be, too, because I'd want to be out at our family cabin on Hood Canal, because it's, to me, it represents the abyss between the Olympic Peninsula and, you know, I don't know, the ego and the id, and it's just...
It's not, it's the other world, it's the center, it's the navel. Where
so
you can,
it's just very...
But it's interesting
cool
how this, it can, I found that it can, well maybe it can't, I don't know. But that your own center is your own center. Mm-hmm. So I put up a post, and I took it down because I was wrestling with some demons. But, I mean, it was all about everything I've done this summer, traveling to the neither regions to find where the center is, you know. Mm-hmm. Because...
So did you work with the Kabbalah at all?
No.
Because that would be like, I'm going to say that makes it bigger, were you like...
I found the...
out on the edge, separate, you know, because... Then the central pillar is where you sort of like bring it all home, but it's these explorations out to the realms of, you know, architecture, or nature, or justice, or mercy, where you can like, if you get way over there, you can hang out there and learn a lot of stuff, but ultimately, you got to bring it back to the central pillar.
Well, I kind of feel like with the consciousness discussion that we're almost like, we're like outwardly. Because like 2012 is like an outside thing, and that when I, it's easy like you find consciousness outward, but when I look inside, like what I actually find is like closer and closer and closer to center. That it's almost like what I find with myself is that it's like a black hole. Like there's a singularity in the center of my head, and that void is what creates a vacuum that then allows experience to flow in. And so I think that on the way in, it passes through more or less a prism that divides the light into the different colors, and that there's some prismatic effect, or like mathematical effect, that you have a series of senses process it, and it just goes down into this void type thing. But we were talking earlier that I think within infinite nothingness, you also have everything. Like, if every single option that ever could happen ever, you would have a sphere-like universe of sorts that was completely full, you know. But in that complete density of absolute fullness, it would be like absolute void. But I find, like, in the center of mind, there's like this tiniest pinprick, and even when I begin to get closer to it, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And that movement is what all this is passing through right now, you know. It's like, you know,
all that experience is going into that black hole.
Yeah, like,
and then where is it coming out?
Well, so we're kind of like looking through the other side, and I think, yeah, and I'm not sure. I don't think it's something you necessarily can. I don't think it's something you're meant to process here, but I almost feel like you go through it every night, you know, like. We all are big on synchronicity, but I think that dream, you know, Jung's other big thing was dreams, you know, maybe even more than synchronicity. Of like, there is some weird duality of waking versus, so maybe when you're awake, and then when you go to sleep, you're like, you know, like, and suck through onto that other side, kind of like a bubble, or almost like an eight, you know, like a, or an infinity sign of that, we come out here and expand in this realm, and then you get sucked back through a singularity and back over into this other.
Where everything collected all day, everything you took in, and now you swim through that. You can swim through it backwards or upside down, or, you know, the Wonderland version.
Yeah, I feel like I dream about stuff from the day before And I also dream about the day, about stuff from the, that's going to happen the next day, you know. Yeah. And that there's some kind of interchange, you know, like bringing pieces back and forth. And maybe that infinity thing would like open up into a circle and that it becomes the same thing.
Or and it's like an inchworm, like, that it's like, here's yesterday, tomorrow, mm-hmm. and you're now. And it's like, yesterday, tomorrow, now. It's sort of like,
yeah.
An inchworm moves through time.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that idea, though, because that does seem to be where I've experienced moments where, you know, where I saved the Golden Gate, for instance, where I was completely living in a dream world, awake, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean you saved the Golden Gate?
Long story.
I just live right by the Golden Gate Bridge, and I keep
it's
having
a good this. One. Okay. And you know, and the idea of, can someone else see your dream? I saw your dream because I told you I tried to take part, and the synchronicity that hit me that very second was insane.
Yeah. I didn't mean to derail what you were saying.
No, I'm just saying though that this strange state of almost being in a fugue state or being moving through experience, moving through a field of consciousness that you can actually, like your boat going through water, you know, is how it feels, and you go, and you're looking over a hill, and you go, and then this is going to come at me, and it does, you know, or then I'm going to see, and I do, and you know. It's pretty interesting.
Because you see it on the horizon, you see...
Yeah, it's like you're using the force or something. You
yeah.
You see it before it happens.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so this is using sync as a predictive quality?
No, it's not... That kind of experience is not using sync. It's like being there, very present, and... I don't know. It's only afterwards that you can that I.
It's like saying using sight to see. It's like you're using this to do this. It's like, no, I'm seeing something. Yes, I'm using the sense of sight. It's like once you're acknowledging this sense of, oh, this is, I'm sailing through this. Once you acknowledge that, then you are just seeing these things, and you can, you know, that's how I sort of see it. It's not like I'm. I don't know if that's the same exact thing.
I guess I'm just trying. Yeah, I'm just trying to say that it's. To me, it is a combining of this subconscious and conscious experience. Mm-hmm. That's all. You know, on a certain level.
I tried to sell that to my shrink this past summer.
He wasn't buying it.
He really wasn't buying it. But
of course, I couldn't be nuts.
Well, that's where he, you know, it's like, this guy's borderline.
But what? I'd be curious.
So the thing was, is he was a full-blooded Jungian priest, you know, so he's got his doctrine, and we all appreciate Jung, but, you know,
Jesus was a
do we really appreciate Jung?
But you can make what Jung said, you know...
When was the last time you sent him a car?
You can take Jung at, you know, and make it work for anything, because he said enough that in any context, but so this guy's basically saying that, you know, and I was trying to sell it, and I still go back and forth. But so, your subconscious is contained in you, you have the dream, and you're able to process what you need to do. The gist I got from this and a book he gave me was that we're projecting our internal upon the canvas of reality, and it's so shitty because we've made our nightmares reality. And there's a little hint of truth to that. That so if you're looking at the mystery play that we're seeing, that we're seeing an internal thing
externally.
Like we're projecting.
That's what I
like our psychological processes on. But
is that solipsism? Is that like, is it? Is everything an aspect of your inner turmoil?
I like the allegory about the ass, check ass with the statue of Isis on top of it. On this.
I'm not familiar with that. With the what?
There was this jackass that was walking along the street with a statue of the goddess Isis on its back, And so people started bowing down and worshiping the jackass with the statue on top, and the jackass thought that it was being worshipped. and so then the master started beating the jackass and saying, no, you're not the one who's being worshipped, it's the goddess.
You're just the bearer of of the godhead.
And see, I think that's why I got knocked down for the cheese.
I missed that whole thing.
It reminds me of the Buddhist parable of the two monks who come to the side of the river, and there's a woman there, and they both swore in a vow of chastity and never to touch a woman, but one of the monks sees her and carries her across, and they keep walking, and she puts her down, and they keep walking, and they get a mile down, and one other monk turns to the one who carried her and is like, what did you just do? You broke our vow. He's like, I put her down about a mile ago, but you're still carrying her. Mm. It's like you with the cheese, my friend.
It's okay. Yes.
Put the cheese down.
But from a sink standpoint, I couldn't let him do that because it invalidated everything. I could see that there was some. There was a kernel there that maybe...
It was like, you're just a conduit for a higher power, man. Of some sort.
You may remember, it's all therapist's job never to buy anything.
He was selling me his therapy, and he was charging an exorbitant amount of money for someone who takes bananas out of a box. Yeah. This is what I get paid to do.
Right.
And he wants, you know... It was a lot.
Yeah.
And so, but he was... You know, and I only do 50 minutes, and, you know, it's this and that and this, and if you're going to break up with me, you have to come back the next week. You know, you break up, and then we have to process the breakup. But,
it was charge you to process the breakup?
Yes.
He'll probably talk you back
into it. So he set up all these really strange boundaries, right, but... It was enough to make me question everything that we do, like, it really is my fault.
That's like if you owned a business and you said, if you quit, you still have to come back tomorrow and work for me so we can talk about it, and I'm not going to pay you, but, you know, while you're working, we can sort of deal with why it was that you quit. And
Well, I mean, it's just taking the whole Zen Master's flim-flam to the next level of psychology, right? Because that was the whole, that the Zen Master, like, sits there and convinces everyone to come and say, can I, and kings and warriors come and say, can I learn from you? And then they just are like, sure. wash my bowl.
Yeah.
And
wash my bowl.
Right. Here, you can go do this chore. You know, that's and therapists have just figured out the way to do that in a capitalist system. It's the same thing. I'm broken.
But here's what's interesting is so in that process I realize I've got seven therapists that I'm working with, you know, and they're doing it for free, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm all. We might be.
That's what it meant.
Hey, no. This is our
payment.
No, I see. Crystal's got it right. We didn't pull it, but
well, there's an amazing practice out there called co-counseling, reevaluation counseling, that is a peer counseling practice. Where you take, it's all based upon trading time. So you get together with someone for an hour, you learn the practice, and then for half an hour you're the client, the other person's the counselor, and then you switch.
Yeah.
But ultimately I think it dismantles therapy's great, except that there's this one sort of like, I think there's something ultimately disempowering about the idea that you have to pay somebody else to care enough to listen to you.
And that's how it felt. In civilization, I don't have, I mean, like, I have to pay someone to be my friend.
But
we could be walking in the hills with our dog and get the same value. I think the world's shitty, man.
Although, friends do a different thing. Friends get up all, like, there's a way that friends are, like, involved in your life, whereas a good counselor...
Oh, yeah, you can't do friends.
...holds a particular space that just, like account, as long as, like, if I know that I'm only going to spend an hour with you a week, for that hour, you're perfect. There's nothing you could possibly do that would bother me, which is the kind of attention that you want from someone who is your counselor. It's just sort of like,
good listening so that you can figure out how to get your thinking.
Like create a space for you.
Yeah. Holding a benign space of, you're doing great, so
but that's what just Ram keep coming back. Like a good yogi or conscious person like creates a space for others to be more fully themselves. Because right. people would come and say, I'm grieving, what should I do? And he would say, grieve some more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you'd just be like, well, whatever they want to do, just allow them and accept them for all of them for that, you know.
But the great thing about the co-counseling practice is that you get to do both parts of your mind in an hour.
Yeah.
For half an hour, you're the part of yourself that can be very yin and just feel and let someone else remember that everything is cool. And then for half an hour, you can be the person who's like, oh yeah, when I'm looking at your shit, everything's fine. I have total faith.
I feel much better.
Exactly. There is no doubt in my mind that you're perfect, you know? And eventually you can kind of figure out, oh yeah, I can do it to myself. You know, I can pray to turn with myself. Yeah. For 10 minutes, I'm going to be a fall apart mess. And
yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yell at a piece of bread.
It could be like two people who have crack in common, though. They're like, they have nothing else in common but a strong love of crack, and it forms strong bonds, and they're like, in there, create a crazy little crack-induced bubble.
I think there's less boundary. It's a hard to hold good boundaries in the crack world.
are there good boundaries in the sink world?
What do you mean by that?
It depends.
I mean, because anyone could say the craziest shit right now.
Yeah,
if right now I said, hey, you know what? I just had this theory about the universe.
It's a chipmunk!
taking a shit on the top of a roller coaster while on mushrooms. And someone's going to go, I can kind of see that.
Not only can I see that, there's a website to vote
on. Right!
Yeah. Yeah, I just say earlier. Or that Hitler was a time traveler.
We're all like, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, we're like, if you could travel back in time, why wouldn't you kill Hitler? And we're like, well, maybe Hitler knew about some even more evil Jewish guy, but he didn't know who exactly he was. So he traveled back in time to kill that guy.
But he didn't know which one, so he had to get rid of all of them.
Yeah, he had to kill them. Yeah, he was a time traveler.
Bad time traveler.
Yeah, you guys are like, yeah, that's kind of,
you know, that's probably it. Like he had the name written down.
Yeah, and he lost it. It went out the window.
Like, what the?
Yeah. They've got the same name.
He was like something Berg. Something. I can't remember exactly what it was. Well, I think that we do say some crazy shit, but I think that makes sense, though. Like, I think
I really didn't say that to make fun of anything. My point was, I don't know if we have boundaries. I'm saying I don't know if we have boundaries. Maybe we do. I don't know.
Well,
I'm just
okay, so
pondering.
For me, that's the essence of why Radio 8 Ball works, is because of good boundaries. Because there's a very strict. You ask a question, you pick a song at random, you would talk about it.
Right.
Within that, you can do anything. But you can't, not pick it at random.
You could
say that there's an interest, there'd be a cool synchronicity if I determined every song. I wouldn't be any fun for me, but it would still be synchronous for you because you can't determine what I'm going to pick.
Right, you're essentially the computer that's picking it at random.
Right. But that wouldn't be any fun for the host, and it wouldn't really be the fractal pop oracle that it is, where it's functioning on all levels. There'd be one level of control.
Right. Right, yeah.
So that would be one thing, that would be a boundary that, like, my take on it has. I don't know, like, everyone's going to find their different boundaries for how they, you know, it's like I was saying that we're going to do our go around of like half hour saying, okay, and mine is going to be, okay, you got this, motherfuckers? Just do that for an hour, because that would be, you know, that would be very random.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have boundaries. The fact that music or movies have these interesting boundaries built into them, the artist's choices, and that there's another consciousness that's working outside of that. It's the boundary that makes it a movie and makes it something that we can watch.
Otherwise, the sync book would be this many pages long if you don't stop it.
Yeah, or just like, be like,
oh, I would have written the same thing eventually.
Right. Yeah, be like Kerouac's writers. Like, it's not writing, it's typing, right? Mm-hmm. But what about the idea of, you know...
What about the idea of a fire?
The one thing I was going to mention, though, about if we did design this and came into it, like, I design stuff, and, like, when working on the cover, you know, I put these little codes or ciphers or little clues, like breadcrumbs, on the cover, and I feel like the same is kind of true. Like, that's what I've used synchronicity as, almost. Not to claim Godhead status, although I do to some extent, but...
You have to.
Yeah, but I do almost sincerely sometimes feel like this was designed, and you just, like, video game designers leave little secret codes.
No, this is what the book was all about, is playing God, right?
No.
Especially when we're you know, correcting other people's mistakes. Without any credit for it.
But you leave little hints, you have little winks, you know, like, you do that, but where you're like the Disney covers where they put a little subliminal shit in the movies, you know, like, you would leave little... things that make you go, because to me, almost synchronicity more often than not is like funny or like enjoy that. I'm like, that's pretty fucking funny. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't you think with the sync book, the idea is that like it was almost was creating that room for people to like, you know, I didn't say
you created the environment.
You know, this guy couldn't do like this. It was just like, hey, let's all talk about something. It basically was that round table with essentially
no multiply.
What's that?
Go forth and multiply?
Yeah, it's essentially no rules. Mm-hmm. The only rules were no copyrighted images, and see how many people couldn't get that one right.
No graven images. No graven images?
Right, exactly. No graven images.
So that's a testament to whatever sync work is. If you put out a thing saying, okay, we're going to do all stuff about the goddess, or we're going to do all stuff, you know... You'd get such a wide array of stuff that it might be such a schizophrenic thing that you only want to read the one that was written by the person you know.
Yeah.
Right. When I flip through this, there's a way that like the sync fan in me is like, whoa, I want to read all these. This is a bunch of like.
But stuff. How am I going to do it? Well, you know, am I going to process it linearly?
I mean, because I've been flipping through and leafing and diving in every now and again.
Start at the beginning, man.
But see, what's interesting for me is I have a relationship to almost like, you know, 9/10 of...
Yeah.
So it's like the novels come to life, where...
It's been concrete,
yeah. It concrete and concrete, yeah.
from the idea into the marvel.
Yeah, see, I have the memento thing. I won't remember any of you tomorrow, so I'll read it and be like,
well, and then the funny thing
you
is that
you set her down while she was still in the water.
We've all come from a world where we have secret identities, and we wear masks, and we have, you know, like superhero costumes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. No.
We have alter egos.
Well, not all of us do. You do.
Okay.
According to Jose Arguelles, and this part of that, we all do. We all have like
of course,
an interdimensional doppelganger who's like.
You mentioned him a couple times. I like his stuff a lot. He was on like this Sounds True like 2012 podcast, and they have like a bunch of authorities on 2012. But he was saying, he was like, yeah, well, there will be like the dimensional shift, you know, like the super consciousness for like 307 days or something. I don't know the exact number, but it was like less than a year. It's like then we'll go back down to the other stage of.
That's what every time I hear somebody talk about this thing, that's what I keep saying.
That's what he was saying. That it's going
to
just
it's a cycle. Like the sun rises and then it descends. So if we were to align with galactic center and suddenly the laser beam coming out of the mother goddess's womb shoots me in the third eye and holy shit, I'm one with everything.
Right.
And then suddenly a minute later the eclipse is over and I'm back out and
for that moment, I was one with God.
I better get to work.
Yeah, and then I goes right back down the cycle. Doesn't that make the most... If it is like about planetary alignments and whatever, Mercury retrogrades, it happens, and we go through cycles.
Except in team, in class of the Titans.
Yeah.
My Oracle.
Yeah.
When the galactic alignment occurs, Kronos escapes from Tartarus. So something happens that changes everything.
Hmm. Yeah, and there's a new... Well, it's the tree with the tree.
I thought that was a bomb.
The top of the tree is the bottom of another tree.
Correct. Yeah.
So
it'd be a next stage.
You hit a heightened state, and then you realize, oh, I'm at the bottom of it again.
The Navajo myth. They're always coming out of a hole in the ground, or like they are the next when they get through the hole in the sky. They're coming out of the ground. It's just...
Oh, right. Or like the gunslinger.
It's kind of like your
the gunslinger. Now,
like
how did...
stick going through the leaf.
Yeah.
How do you read the end of that? Because
I think that's exactly that. I think it's the tree. He gets to the top.
But
it's Sync Book 2, you know.
But are you content with that? Because I am content with him spinning.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to be content with that any more than you're supposed to be content with the rosebud at the end. That's what's so great, is it leaves you in this state of... Like, what is it?
Well, but do you... Right. Do you want him to succeed? Like, I work with this guy. No, but like, at one time, if he was...
He's got the horn this time. It's, you know, he's gonna get the football. If he, you know, you just hope... He's gonna kick it. He's gonna kick that fucker so far. Lucy's gonna go, "Whoa, my God!"
I swear. Hey, every time I read the Beatles story, I hope that John Lennon doesn't get shot. You know, but he always does. It sucks. But I'm there in 1979, thinking this dude is not gonna fucking happen.
Well, what is maybe Doug Stanhope? He's like, it's like maybe it was good. Jimi Hendrix is dead. You know, so he's not fat and overweight playing Super Bowl halftime, you know?
Yeah.
Doug Stanhope had some still good ones in
there. I loved him. He's great.
Yeah. Or the Jimi Hendrix, I'm sure he had more good songs in him. Same with John Lennon, but I do like that idea that it's like, well,
they
might be playing
those
fucking
those are, you know,
Super Bowl halftime shows.
The 27 Club.
Jimi Hendrix was a 27. Not Lennon. He made it through his Saturn.
But then,
excuse me. When did Marilyn Monroe die? She was older than that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think she was probably older than 27.
Yeah.
You don't have to be 27 to die young.
That's right.
But it helps.
Well, I do think even if there is only this momentary consciousness, like I've had out-of-body experiences where I was explaining to Steve and Alan of that, I would like pass out while... or like go out of body while on drugs, and like I'm listening to this song, and I go out and I feel what was in a timeless dimension, but I felt like I flew around like the entire universe for like what would be like millions of years, and then come back and like this like didn't even skip a syllable in the song. So it could be that type of thing of where you, if there is ultimate consciousness or some higher level of consciousness, even for a millisecond, like that's where the singularity would be.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nothing really, you know, like it would be that true singularity is not
the even end of Lost.
Yeah, but they all go, and that's kind of, I get a vision of that, of maybe,
so a lot of people are really dissatisfied with how that ended because what happened.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Don't tell me the end.
Alright, so then the question is, does the clock go up to 12, right? And then does time slow down to such an extent that it essentially lasts forever? So it's basically like your countdown to midnight, and then suddenly it's like, oh, it's 2012, bing, and then we just stay there?
Everyone
like,
turns to stone.
There's a Kabbalist in San Francisco, and he had like some...
That's a sink bomb.
Yeah.
Everyone sinks.
Like yeah, it's like...
Yeah.
Oh,
he was talking about that. The universe is expanding and expanding and expanding, and that this 2012 date is actually when it's like
starts to contract,
and then it goes
dang
back
it
in.
Is that what's next? The sink bomb comes out December 21st, 2012. Is that?
Well, I guess comes one.
What? I've had weird visions of like a. It was weird. I had some weird things.
Like that's like the next work. Like it has to be.
The sink bomb?
It doesn't have to be the sink bomb.
Oh, but
it comes
to say
it drops.
Next thing you do,
The next sync bomb drops on December 21st, 2012. Like, that's what we're working for now.
Oh, that's a pretty awesome idea.
I mean, not that I'm saying that's what I want to do, but is that just what the universe commanded by...
And then what is it?
Well, I mean, and I think that's the question. Where do you see yourself?
Sync what is that? Right, and that was the question, right.
If you have to live in one... I think that's what it is. If you have to live in one moment forever, where do you want to be? Do you want to be, like, you know, do you want to be...
I think you should be there all the time.
But I think there is something about that. About there's something happening with consciousness around that date that's been happening to consciousness since long before any of us were corrupted.
Or maybe that's the question we ask in the book. You get your
same credit
to say,
you know, 2012 then becomes the focus, the kernel that it grows around, and so we're using sync not anymore as the focus, but it's the tool to explore what's coming in 2012, what I want from 2012, or, you know, whatever. I don't know. Now I'm just throwing stuff at the wall.
Well, I think there's something good about the participatory aspect of that, of saying it's like, well,
because well, then you can make it happen.
So yeah, you're like, well, let's drop the craziest shit we can.
So everything we've been, you know, all the people are worried about what we're going to do because mm-hmm. we decided we're going to do it. All the...
Like, and it could...
The ripples.
It could, I mean, they have that old quote.
And that's why it's the sink bomb.
People changing the world, that it might not be anything outside of this room that's going to happen, you know, but it'd be like, well, 10 motherfuckers just... went to super consciousness, you know, to someone, like, then the rest of the people were able to follow the lead, like, it might have...
But even just those 10 motherfuckers, like, you know, you look at the movie Holy Mountain, right? But basically, you go to the top of the mountain, you become the enlightened one, and then what do you have to do? You have to come back down, and you have to take what you learned back with you. So that's why I say, it's a cycle. You're going to reach midnight.
After you eat the spaghetti monster.
Yeah, but you have to try and take whatever you learn in that moment, whether that's 2012 or right now we go to the peak of the Holy Mountain, or just using what it's actually all of this is signifying.
But you know what?
You figure it out.
If it's just 10 guys, it's just 10 guys or 10 people or whatever, it's just a few, you know, that's been going on forever.
Right.
Like a few people putting it together.
There have been more.
I think that's the thing of the 2012.
So the sync bomb is somehow using the cloud to get everyone.
That everyone. And that's what. That's why I don't think it is like I can make your 2012 happen. Because that's the whole point. Is it's all
this is like Bill Murray at the end of Scrooge.
Well, I've heard of the
what is it going to take for you to
stuff that it would be? That would almost be my highest ideal, and that's what I aim for is like the planet of Krishna type beings, you know. But I don't even think that's out of reach right now. I mean,
no, I think this gathering is to me a bit of proof that
yeah, but
definitely available.
Yeah, and I guess some of it's weird that like the 2012 thing happens to be alongside this almost tsunami of technology of information and all this other stuff going on too, because I do get a sense of like some grand approach to a singularity with that as well, but I also get the sensation of like a runaway train, you know, that it's like that it's like who's driving this thing, you know, like that it
blaster shields down, Luke.
No, man. Heading back to the future. Yeah. The train goes down, but you're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I don't really worry about it. It would almost could be on the dark side of things. Like maybe it is some extreme catastrophe, and that we're part of the final cast of Earth. You know that is. That you have 6 billion people going into the other world. You know, you'd have like pharaohs who would have their servants killed.
We're the graduating class and we blow up the school on our way out.
Yeah, that is like, it's like boom, you know, and you have like 6-7 billion people all going through the other side at the same time would be. And I had like kind of a dark vision, almost like Dr. Manhattan style, seeing like atom bomb in the future of like a big atomic, like glowing, like
atom bomb.
And so I was like worried about that, and I was like, "Oh shit!" Like this makes me nervous. But then we went I had some weird sinks around this that I won't go all into, but we went to like this benefit concert that had like atomic bomb, but it was a tree. And that's kind of what I've taken it as, is instead of it being like this light shaped tree thing that I saw wasn't an atomic explosion, it was like a tree of life thing coming. That's what it was. It was like a thing of...
But it was a common thing with this idea. Oh, yeah, that's probably one of the things that you saw from that post.
Yeah.
Was the idea of, it's been said a number of times, that like LSD, the discovery of LSD and the discovery of how to detonate an atomic bomb were sort of like the polar opposites of each other. It's like we figured out how to like open our minds and we figured out how to destroy shit, and that they were sort of like...
Did they happen simultaneously?
No, not simultaneously. But
we blew our mind and blew up Japan at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like this idea of, the tree of knowledge and that mushroom cloud.
When was Albert? When did Hoffman go for his bike ride?
I think it was in the early 40s.
Yeah. Was it early 40s? Was it early 40s?
Because obviously it takes a lot longer to build an atom bomb than it does to build a hit of acid. And you could totally see the moment of,
oh my god,
splitting the atom and the moment of blowing the acid mine. If you're getting to early 40s, then you're getting to the point where that's where they're
testing them and
where they're getting those scientists together to go to Trinity, and there's a little bit before then, but that means that those scientists are going for their own bike rides, being like, what if I did this?
Yeah.
You know?
And that same Akashic vision. Records. Right, and and out of the Akashic Records comes this vision of like, here's how to open a hole in space, here's how to blow a mind, and that other guy got the thought of, oh shit, here's how to blow up a country.
Well, so like, what if like all the like kings who died in like the 60s were like because so many people blew their minds and like killed their own kings?
Huh? It's possible, man.
I've read that before.
For me, probably.
Well, I think that would be kind of a sick joke of that. A weird scenario I've seen playing out would almost be that just shit got so bad that there was only like one person left who survived the chaotic apocalypse, and that they reach God consciousness just for 1 second. Mm-hmm. And then through like reaching that for 1 second, that then it like started the game back over, you know, or something like that.
Oh, right, like a video game.
In your ear, well, I got a radio cabin down below. Yeah, baby, let's go to the cabin down below. Oh, baby, let's love.